You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network. Right, straight out of the Turkish barbershop at Camp Fallujah, Kylie Minogue playing 18 hours a day in that damn place. I'm not saying blondes are a big deal in the Middle East, but if you're a blonde and you can't get a date, just get on a plane and head to the Middle East, man.
That's true.
Is that true? Am I lying about that?
No, they're not, because they think blondes are a symbol of the West.
They are, and they are. Blondes are the symbol of the West. Why we don't have a blonde on our flag, I'm not exactly sure. John Ubaldi, Master Gunnery Sergeant, United States Marine Corps retired, owner-operator of Ubaldi Reports. You can check it out on Facebook and on the Internet. Just had his appendix out. But before I leave Kylie Minogue in Camp Fallujah, that is just a great story. Every time I hear that song, it reminds me of what it is to be a Marine. And what it is to be a Marine is to walk in the first time to the barbershop, Turkish Barbers, at Camp Fallujah, and sit down, and there's all these Marines getting their haircuts, so you sit down, and they cut your hair, and at the end of it, the guy looks at me, and I'll give you a quiz, Master Guns. He says, "Do you want the flame?" Okay, I don't know what the flame is. So, one, do I ask what the flame is? Remember, I'm a grunt.
Yeah, I don't know about that.
Okay, I did not. Because I didn't want to be a pussy, right? If I ask what the flame is, that tells everybody what? He's a pussy.
But you didn't know what the flame was. And it's...
Right? Yeah, and he's afraid. I'm not afraid, man. Come on. And so I didn't ask what it was, and I said, yeah. So... the next, like, 30 seconds, I was like, well, what the hell is he going to do? So he gets this, he gets this alcohol bottle with this paper clip that's been straightened out with a cotton ball at the end of it, and he lights it on fire. So that's obviously the flame. Well, the question is, what's he going to do with it? And then he burned all the hair, like, off your ears, that little fuzz hair stuff. He burned the head, that, and then did it on my forehead. I didn't know I had hair growing out of my forehead. I'm not Italian. What the hell? So, so that's a plan. So whenever I hear that song, it reminds me of that little piece of stupidity. But if you're a part of the culture, you understand. And because Marines looked at him like, and they're like, that guy's a man. He took a flame. And I am a man, damn it. So speaking of men, tell me about getting your appendix out. Why? You're a pretty healthy guy. Why did you have to have your appendix taken out? What did you do?
It's not what I did. It's
right.
I asked them that, what does the appendix do? And they go, it really does nothing. But when you get bacteria into your appendix, there's no valve to let it out. It just builds and builds and your appendix gets bigger and bigger. So only thing you have to do is just remove it. And the only thing that I was able to recover that much faster, because they took it out Monday morning about 10, 11 o'clock, and I went home that evening at 6 o'clock. So the reason I went home so early is because I am healthy. They were just stunned that, wow, you're healthier than most 53-year-olds. So all they're trying to do is now limit your exercise. You can just walk a little bit. Give it about 21 days, then you can get back to lift a little bit of weights, and then down the road you can get back to the heavy stuff like you were. It's just one of those freak things.
You had it on a Monday, and when did you go home?
That same day. Once I got out of the recovery, I want to make sure that you're all right. I got a little bite to eat. I say, hey, I'm good. Let's me go home. Okay. Check me out. Friends picked me up and took me home.
That was it?
That was it. A little sore. I mean, just because, you know, you got operated on. But other than that, I just want to get back to what I was doing before. I can't swim till and run till next month, but I just want to get back to what I was doing. But staying healthy helps you recover that much faster.
Interesting. So, you know, I mean, a lot of things that we used to spend, you know, a week in the hospital for, you know, are now treated like this, which is, you know, for us older people, it's hard to believe. I sound like my grandmother, you know, the day they were landing on the moon. You know, she said, you know, when I grew up in this town, we were in Sacramento. When I grew up in this town, there were gas lamps. I mean, literally kerosene lamps that somebody walked around with a pole, right, flipped that little glass thing open and lit the kerosene. There were horses and wagons. There was no cars. And, yeah, you're like, what, Grandma? There was no telephone. The roads were dirt, and the city flooded.
Well, just even the procedures. They went in. They think, okay, he had a pain in his stomach. They sent me to get a CT scan, and that showed, oh, yeah, your appendix is large. We'll test it with doing antibiotics. That didn't make it get worse, but didn't make it get better. We'd operate, and they didn't really do an incision. They did like an arthroscopic, or they call it bodyscopic, and they go in, so you're not down as long as you used to be. And even surgeries are not done like they used to do. So the medical technology, I mean, we got some great medical care in this country now. The whole problem is if you can get access to it, that's a whole different argument.
Right. No, it is just astounding that all the things that you used to go in and spend, you know, great amounts of time for in the hospital now, you know, like knee replacements. You go have your knee replaced, you're walking on that knee like later that day. Which is like, what? Crazy stuff, you know, appendix. Go have it, go home. Having a baby, you know, you're gone most of the time within 24 to 48 hours. You don't stay in the hospital now for 4 or 5 days after the baby's born. You go home.
No, so, they're finding out. And then the other thing is, by you keeping yourself healthy, they were just amazed that they kept asking me, you smoke, you drink, you did. And I go, no, I don't do any of that stuff. And because they check my blood, your oxygen levels, and man, you're more like an athlete. So by staying healthy, you're more susceptible to recover that much faster, and you don't need as much downtime as some people that are unhealthy.
You know, so during the show, I keep a monitor on, and on Fox right now, there's Alan Dershowitz is on. Now, it's really interesting when these people, like, they come on from their home. Right? No makeup, right? They just use some bullshit camera like we would buy down at Best Buy, and they hook it to their computer, and maybe Fox sends somebody over to you know, to G it up for them, and they come on in a natural state. You're like, whoa, ow. Got to throw some makeup on and change the camera angle, man. First of all, your nose is taking up about 50% of the show. And you got to raise the camera angle a little bit, okay? And you got to throw a little makeup on too. Holy smokes!
Yeah, it's just interesting what the technology we have today. I can't imagine what it's going to be like in 10, 15 years.
All right, let's talk. I want to switch gears now. Let's talk about nukes. Secretary Mattis testifying yesterday. Washington Post wrote a story about his evolution.
Correct.
You know, he testifies initially, not too much, you know, it sounds like he's kind of, more of a, we don't need to modernize and spend all that money. There's better use for it. Talk to us about his evolution on the subject of nukes.
Well, the Washington Post, before he spoke, you're right, he did an evolution on nuclear weapons. And I think what your listeners understand, the nuclear weapons in the U.S. military arsenal is primarily with the Air Force and the Navy. General Mattis really did not have much of a, an interest, but never was involved around nuclear weapons in his military career because he was a Marine. Mm-hmm. And Marines just don't have, or not around, or being associated with nuclear weapons. So when he became Secretary of Defense,
we're our own nuclear device, okay?
There you go. There you go. But when he became Secretary of Defense, he went to, he was one of the first Secretary of Defense in a long time to do this so early in his tenure. He went to all the different nuclear bases, the ICBM silos, the airfields. He talked to experts on both sides, Democrats and Republicans. He talked to the scientists. Everybody can think of, he got and wanted to know everything and picked their brain. And that's why he goes by that moniker, the Warrior Mock, and that gave him his evolution on nuclear weapons. I think he was kind of ambivalent about the need for the ICBMs when we've got the sea and air launch capabilities coming from our submarines and our aircraft from the B-52s and the B-2 bombers. But I think he's looking at it from a strategic angle because Russia, China have really expanded into their nuclear capabilities. Russia looks at that they can do a limited nuclear war if we ever got into contention with NATO. That would be advantageous to Russia. So he's looking at that in the strategic angle more so than the tactical level. And that just morphed into his thinking of why we need to do certain things with our nuclear capabilities.
And so we will now go ahead and modernize that capability, yes?
We're going to modernize it, but he also wants to add another component of it, to a low yield, I think what's called a surface cruise missile come from the Navy,
right,
like a new version of that or a new aspect to that. And his strategic aim was to use this as leverage against Russia and to a degree against China, because we're seeing Russia and China modernizing their forces and expanding. You see what's going on with North Korea and the potential with the nuclear agreement with Iran. That just delays the inevitable of Iran obtaining a nuclear device because their infrastructure is still in place. And at any time, the deal only is going to be for 10 years and then, or 15 years, I think. And then they can go back to doing what they did before. And the other aspect of, because I read the plan of action, I think it was the nuclear posture review that came out last Friday. And if you go through it, it's pretty detailed. But if you go through it, it all talks about deterrence. And the last 8 years, it kind of goes off to President Obama's, what he did in 2010. But the difference is President Obama was seen by the world of retreating, of the United States retreat from the world stage.
Okay, hold on. Before you can complete that, let me just, and so by this unilateral American policy, the Russians and the Chinese both believe that as they evolve their nuclear capacities and the technology involved in delivering, that we may still have ample, but if it came to it, they could beat us to the punch, and in a short, you know, I don't even know how to say this well, confined nuclear war, they could win, and that's the opening. Yeah. That's the opening that the United States has created for them, kind of in the strategic window, in the strategic nuclear window. It would be similar to us, the gap that we created when we left Iraq on the ground. That they believe,
you're correct.
Yeah, ISIS believed that they could exploit that. The Russians believed that they could exploit us and our lack of investment in our nuclear technology, and that they could win. And so this is Secretary Mattis dropping the steel door on that, or at least, you know, communicating that the steel door is being dropped on that.
No, you're correct, because there was an aspect that Russia believed if they got into a confrontation with NATO that they could use like a tactical or a nuclear weapon that would not expand it but just limited the war but make it advantageous to Moscow. And we had let the window open much as you said what we did in Iraq by leaving, and even though the nuclear posture review is similar to what President Obama did in 2010, but the difference is General Mattis, or Secretary of Defense Mattis, is letting the world know, especially Russia and China and Iran and North Korea to a lesser degree, is like, the United States isn't going away. He wants to put it that if you do this, we are coming there.
Right.
And that's the difference. And President Obama allowed Russia and China to be more assertive on the world stage, because what Russia and China's aims are is to upset the world order that was set by the United States and the Allies in the closing days of World War II with the Bretton Woods Agreement, you know, free trade and all this. They want to change the world order more advantageous to China and Russia, and especially with China's economy being the number two, they want to set the rules that are set for them and only them. And this goes to that level. And that's what people need to understand, that what Russia and China's aims are.
You know, I had Grant Newsham on the program yesterday, retired Marine, and he was talking about we were talking about the Chinese mode of extortion in their criminal enterprise. And one is, we have this incredible demand that can do incredible things for your economy, right? So
sure.
So we're going to open up relations, and we're going to begin to do some limited economic stuff, and that goes boom, right? That goes boom.
Okay.
And so so after it goes boom, then what? Then we have a conversation, and the Chinese say, hey, why don't we expand this to include military, cultural, blah, 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 blah. Okay, let's do that. Right, and we'll allow more manufacturing. So the hook gets set deeper, right? Then they turn to a company, and Boeing's going through this right now. Okay, well, if you want us to continue to buy your commercial airliners, we want this technology to be produced here in China. And what is the – so now once they have your technology, and if you put it into China, make no mistake about it, there is no privacy there. They will have it, and they will own it. Now they own – do they own Boeing? Do they own their technology? Do they own American-developed technology in partnership with Boeing? Because that's the aim. Make no doubt about it. Because they could get commercial airliners. So it's this dance that's done with with economic blackmail, and the Philippines is going through this. If you look at where the Chinese the islands that the nine dash line that they've proposed in the South China Sea, it's a joke. It goes right up the coast of the Philippines. You know, and it includes, like, what's it called, the economic exclusion zone off the coast of a country? Yeah, China just declares that they own it all. And you look at it, and you're like, that line has nothing to do with China. And so...
Well, it does. You're absolutely correct. But see, what China has done in the South China Sea, and that's where most of the trade coming out of the Straits of Malacca go through. They have to go right by that. But China saw and expanded in there because they saw the weakness of the United States, because what happens in one part of the world happens in another part. Now, there was a book called, written by Garry Kasparov. If I pronounced his name right, he was a Russian chess champion, but he became a Russian activist. He wrote a book called Winter is Coming. And he talked about what the United States did in the last 8 years by allowing Putin to get away with things in Crimea and in the Ukraine. And that set the stage for what China was doing in the South China Sea, because they saw they did something and we just gave weak responses. And China saw that, oh, America's not going to do anything. And then they see what's going on. And we talked about this on our show regarding the Navy accidents across the Pacific. It's not lost on Beijing. So they see that the United States is kind of pulling back, and the other countries in the region, like Vietnam, the Philippines, and others, are worrying about, is the United States pulling back? Because we used to have a pretty good-sized fleet. Now we're down to, 300-plus ships, and I think there was a report that the Marines don't have enough amphibious ships to do what they need to do.
Yeah.
So it's not lost on China. And they just see America's pushing back, we're extending or ascending, and they're going to keep expanding until something changes the calculation.
My guest, John Ubaldi, we're talking about the Secretary of Defense's testimony that you're going to hear probably in about 29 minutes, and yesterday in front of the House Armed Service Committee. And his thinking on that has changed. And, again, we're just kind of sidetracked a little bit by how the Russians and how the Chinese see openings and then attempt to leverage our technology, which is what they need most from the United States, our technology, and try to get that through commercial companies that want to do business with them. They dangle the demand of their economy in front of companies and the money involved in that, and then they extort your technology. So, interesting stuff. I talked a little bit earlier in the program about, and again, I don't want to get into a Mattis love fest, but speaks pretty highly of him, the intellectual rigor that he applies to an issue, that he would come to a different conclusion than he started, because he's no intellectual lightweight.
No, he's not. Well, what General Mattis does, or let's go Secretary of Defense Mattis, he really gets to a heart of the matter. He maybe have one assumption, like he maybe had one viewpoint, but then he finds answers that he maybe not have thought of. It's like, oh, I didn't think about that. And he can change his thinking into another direction. That just shows the intellectual mind that he has. And that's what he's always done. He's always trying to think ahead of a problem to get ahead of it. If he didn't know the answer, he's going to go out and find it. But he's going to talk to all the experts and not have a predisposed notion of where he's going. He has an open mind to that. But the one thing he did talk about, I mean, yesterday in front of Congress, that he's really concerned about, and we talked about this, I think a couple shows ago when you had me rate what's our biggest challenges, and I mentioned that the budget. And he's talking about these continuing resolutions that's really hampering the military. And it's not lost on Russia and China. They're seeing that. And I think that's what he's going to talk about again today.
Okay. All right. We'll hear that testimony at the bottom of the hour. So, again, what ultimately the Secretary of Defense is trying to ratchet down is these perceived openings that Russia and China see, and really the United States has atrophied as a superpower, and he is attempting to reinvigorate that around the world. The B-52 strikes in Afghanistan of Taliban labs and refinement facilities that have heretofore gone untouched. In northern Afghanistan near the Chinese border, right? Don't think that did not get people's attention. That some of the assets that have been used in support of the Iraqi military in Syria and Iraq are now migrating to Afghanistan, and the Taliban is going to get it like they've never got it before. And that is quintessentially him, in that. You know, in fact, I was at the 77-3 dedication of the 1st Marine Division battle colors on Friday, and the speaker was speaking from a podium, and it was a wooden podium, very well, very beautifully done, and the symbol of the division, the blue diamond, carved in front in wood, and then above it, no better friend, and below it, no worse enemy. This is the no worse enemy part that the Taliban will experience now. and with every asset that the American military can throw at it, that's appropriate in terms of weaponry. But make no mistake, there's big statements being sent that we're gonna drop the shit hammer of the gods on you, like we've never done since this fight started. And then you can decide if you want to sit down and talk about peace. So anyway, go ahead.
But the one thing that Secretary of Defense Mattis does that's kind of different that we haven't seen in some time, he doesn't pump his chest. He's not open and look what I did. Because remember when we did the Bin Laden raid, everybody couldn't wait to get in front of a camera and say, look, we did this and we did that. That's not Secretary of Defense Mattis. That's not that national security team that President Trump has. They don't toot their own horn. They're comfortable who they are. They don't need this adulation of, oh, look at me, look what I did. They're just doing the business of the nation and telling our adversaries, you screw around with the United States, you're going to get your butt kicked. And we're going to throw everything and the kitchen sink at you. And he's telling our allies, hey, we are going to be there for you. We're not backing away. We're not slipping off into the sunset. That's the difference that we haven't seen in some time.
No. In fact, the American agenda was exactly the opposite. It was we were scaling back, you know, and we were fighting this war, but we were still on the glide path, post-Soviet Union world, you know, Fortress Conus, shrinking back, different. And now, you know, that seems to be not what we're doing anymore. So it'll be interesting to hear his direct testimony. But again, that's pretty. If you're not reading the tea leaves, then you're missing out because he is sending some very very direct messages to people. Next question. Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, but he also sent a shot across the bow to both the Republicans and Democrats in Congress. He goes, quit screwing around with the budget. And he didn't say this like I'm going to say. Do your job. Quit doing these continuing resolutions. This is crippling our military. Our readiness is down because they can't project. They can't get new things going because they don't have the money. They don't know what the budget's going to be. And that's what he's telling Congress. He told them yesterday, bluntly, stop this and get us a budget. I mean, I know the House passed theirs, but the Senate hasn't even gone to the president yet. They're months behind. And they've been kept doing this since the sequester started in 2011. So that's another shot that he's throwing out. Hey, guys, we're doing our job, but you need to do yours.
I played that quote. No military on the planet has done the damage to the United States military that he doesn't say Congress. He says sequestration and the Budget Restraint Act have done. So again, being very delicate there. But he's yesterday, I think, who's the chairman of the Senate of the House Armed Services Committee? Guy from Texas. What's his name?
Oh, Max Thornburg.
So he said, I believe that's the most stark warning we've ever been given by a Secretary of Defense. And the one thing that I will say this, Mattis is he knows how to play politics, but when the hand is stacked in his favor, the one thing that's interesting about him is that he doesn't overplay his hand. He doesn't say
no.
Congress. He says the budget sequestration. So he's no stranger to the political game, but he's also knows his job, and he knows that young 18, 19-year-old members of the United States military are depending on him to do what other Secretary of Defenses have not done and get them what they need. So anyway, all right, let's talk about your latest column. What are you writing about?
Well, the next column I'm going to put together, it's going to be one that came out last Friday was the Republican memo regarding the FISA warrant or with the dossier. And now the president has the Democratic memo that's going to counteract what the Republicans did. But what the Democrats have added in, they're kind of setting Trump up. Because they put in things that talk about methods and tactics or sources that are classified. So when the president redacts it, they can say, well, look, he redacted something, but he didn't redact something on the Republican side. But as more and more comes out, and we talked about this before a while ago, it makes me believe there's something there. One, we're told, oh, the dossier wasn't a big deal, but the FBI and the DOJ used the dossier knowing it was paid for by the Democrats and the Hillary Clinton, and they went to the FISA court, but never told the FISA court who funded it, who paid for it, and Christopher Steele had an animus against Donald Trump. And then we're finding out there was text messages between Lisa Page and Peter Strzok that's in September of 2016, and Lisa Page said, POTUS, meaning President of the United States, wants to know everything about what we're doing, referencing to the Hillary Clinton email when he had said he didn't know anything about it. So more and more is coming out that there really is a big problem here. And we'll see what Michael Horowitz, I think is his name, he's the one that's the Inspector General for the Department of Justice, is looking at how the FBI and the DOJ handle the investigation of the Clinton email and subsequent investigations. So we're looking at a huge constitutional issues here.
So the bombshell, the latest bombshell is the first mention in those text messages that the President of the United States wanted to know everything about this.
Correct. That was Lisa Page.
Yeah. That everything else, their hatred of the president, obviously legendary, and what we've seen before, but the timeline as it's now being evolved, you know, what they knew when they knew it, is something that. Is something that's getting more and more and more disturbing as you watch it. So it'll be interesting to see where this goes. And again, I would say, look, Master Guns and I are both conservatives. However, I think any honest broker looks at the number of data points, and if you don't come to the conclusion that something's wrong, then something's wrong with you. There's too many data points at too high of a level.
Well, the thing is, I tell people, I had one Marine who was a lawyer, joined the Marines and everything, and she said this, and she was like, follow the data points. If you don't think anything's wrong, what would have been if the flip side had happened, all this happened in 2008? The FBI, DOJ, taking a document that was paid for by the McCain campaign and the RNC, went to the FISA court, got a warrant, not telling the FISA court what you got and how you got it, spied on Donald Trump and Barack Obama and his associates, the intelligence community, unmasked members of Obama's team. You really think that wouldn't be an issue?
Well, of course it would. You and I both know that. I mean, it's not like that, it's not like the media doesn't have an agenda here. You know, I mean, they hate Donald Trump. You know, the question, you know, again, and Trump is his own inflammatory human being, right? What's interesting is that most of the time, the things he's doing resonate with the American people. You know, and so I think there's this sense of, oh, well, he talked about it once, so that's enough. No, it's not. No, it's not. And the American people don't think it's enough. And so it's interesting when Trump, unlike a lot of presidents, I mean, he will burn it down on an issue. For instance, Super Bowl got played on Sunday, right? What did he, you know, did he back away or shy away in any way, shape, or form from the national anthem thing? No, he did not. Okay? He did not. He went straight after it. And so that changes a lot of, you know, simply the way people look at an issue and all of that. So I'm not exactly sure how people think that this stuff is supposed to go, but, you know, he not going away. He is not going away. And
well, the thing with people, I mean, I understand Donald Trump is just his own worst enemy, but there's a historian at the Hoover Institute, a guy named Victor David Hansen, and he goes, well, people don't understand with Donald Trump. Here's a billionaire populist. He's from New York, has a kind of a weird accent, has this kind of orange hair. He's not the most articulate guy. He doesn't have a very big vocabulary. He's kind of rough around the edges. And he speaks to the public. He understands what rural America middle-class voters are going through. And you've got the progressives who come from their ideal elitist areas. They push climate change, but yet they fly in private jets and live in these mega mansions. They are against border walls like Mark Zuckerberg does, who speaks out against border walls, but he lives behind this walled mansion. So basically, you guys got to live your life, but I get to do something different. And the American people, like, we're tired of that. It's just like they talk about we're all against vouchers and choice for education. You got to go to public schools, but my kids get to go to private schools. How is that? And American people, is not lost on the American people. And that's how Donald Trump got to be president.
All right. Let's talk about, so your column, what's the thrust of the column?
The thrust of the column is just going to be a comparison and contrast between when the memo gets released to what the Republicans did. The Republican memo was basically showing that the DOJ, James Comey, Rosenstein, McCabe, and the Attorney General had signed off on the FISA warrant, taking it to the court, saying that they did use the dossier to get that warrant to spy on Carter Page and other associates.
Okay, so what's your point? What's your point though? Because that's like documented fact now.
Well, that is documented fact. I want to see what the Democratic response is to that memo. I've heard excerpts of those on the intelligence community, or the intelligence committee, who approved that all it is, that 10 pages, it just goes after how wrong the Republicans are, how Devin Nunes is just taking this away from the Russian investigation. So I want to read it first before I want to see how I contrast it with the Republicans. Did they refute what said on that? The DOJ and the FBI using that document. They said there's other evidence, but they never showed what is that other evidence, but they never refuted the fact that that dossier was used and taken to a federal judge without that judge's knowledge, knowing that this was a partisan opposition research paper and not evidence that's ever been substantiated. No one's refuting that yet. And that's what I kind of want to compare and contrast on. What are they going to say that counteracts what the Republicans have said for many months now?
Yeah, I was most interested in all that memo stuff last week because I like Trey Gowdy. I was most interested to see who was going to be the liar in all of it, you know, because Trey Gowdy to me seems like an honest broker. He seems like a guy who.
Yeah, I like him too.
Yeah, who. And so when you have a guy like that telling you, and then you have a guy like Adam Schiff walking out and saying, hey, this is going to harm national security. This is, you know, and all the Chicken Little stuff that they rolled out for it. You're looking at it going, okay, well, it can't be both. So somebody's not telling the truth. Who's not telling the truth? And so, again, I think it's the same group that fought the subpoena for the information, fought the release of it, because if this is all about politics, then, you know, it because they knew it would diminish the investigation against Donald Trump. The investigation certainly has to go on, but you have more and more people saying this was just a political hatchet job.
Well, the point
is,
you're right, because they made it sound like this was going to be Armageddon, that we're going to release all this classified material. And you read the memo, and I'm like,
there's nothing in
there.
What's
classified in this?
So why would you say that?
Yeah, but then the question is, on the Russian investigation, and I don't know what Robert Mueller has, my question is, what's the crime? What is the crime that Robert Mueller is investigating of Donald Trump? And nobody has answered that. We've been doing this for...
Well, Mueller at some point is going to answer it, but, I mean, everybody, the initial, you know, and Trey Gowdy was talking about that. I don't know if you saw his interview yesterday, but pretty interesting interview. He said, look, when your mandate as a prosecutor is to investigate charges of collusion with the Russians in the election of 2016 and any other issue related to it. He said, when that is your mandate, and which includes and any other issue related to it, where does that stop? Where does that not go? And so that's the whole, in my opinion, that's the flaw of the whole special prosecutor thing.
It was a
Ken Starr thing that went on forever. It started with Whitewater, then it migrated to Monica Lewinsky, blah, 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 blah. It's just, you know, but again, if that's just political theater and it's not about the truth because it's about politics, and when you get politicians involved, it's never about the truth. Then I guess it's for the rest of us to sort out what we believe and don't believe that's going to be fought over in the media by these two parties that can't do the work of the nation. So what I thought was interesting, worthy of a column, I might add, is Trump's whole notion about the earmark system. The earmark system got things done. Now, is there a way that we can refine it so that we don't have the bridge to nowhere anymore? Because what we have now, again, think about it. We don't even have a budget, and we're talking about the Department of Defense. I think that merits a column. Is there a newer form of the earmark system, you know, that will allow us to go back to some type of system where we at least do the major business of the nation, and then we can agree on the, you know, the boutique items. But the major lifting that we do on an annual basis gets done. And we can fight about immigration for as long as we want to. But the budget gets passed. The military gets taken care of.
I agree. I think the biggest problem is both parties can't even work together. Look at the viral things that come out.
Yeah, but again, here's my point. My point is that's a system now that we have in which the Senate blocks just about any legislation that can go through because they can, right?
You're right.
There are archaic rules of cloture that require new legislation to have 60 votes. You know, doom it. Nobody's going to have 60 votes, or at least that I can see. Nobody's going to have 60 votes.
No, it's not going to happen. Uh-huh.
All right, so again, that means that nothing's going to happen very much. And the United States Senate is, you know, stops everything. But the earmark system, think about it. The whole budget sequestration thing was put in because nobody thought it would ever be used. It was a course of action so drastic that Congress would surely swerve away from it. Congress has not. And so the landscape has changed, and that's now the system that we live in, right? We can't, people on the margin, we can't say, all right, look, we're willing to take a look at, we're willing to earmark something in order to get your support because we're not that far away. And you can at least say, you know what, I compromised because I got funding for our irrigation program, which, and that's how that system worked.
It did. That's how it worked.
Right. And so, I thought his comment of about a month ago was interesting because it deals with the political landscape that has brought us to this point where nothing gets done, not even a budget. And if you can't enact a budget, then why are we sending you there? Why are we paying you? And I, you know,
that's a valid point. I mean, because we don't have a budget, not just on the military side, but on the domestic side as well.
People could say Californians are crazy, but there's a deal in California that if you don't pass the budget, as a legislator, you don't get paid.
That should be the same thing in Washington.
And guess what? Budgets get passed now.
Yeah.
Interestingly, I know. All right, how many days are you laid up? When will you be able to get out and PT again?
No, I'm going to start tomorrow just basically walking on a treadmill. They don't want me lifting anything until after the 26th of this month. I'll get back into the pool and running in March. It's still lightweight. I can't get back to really heavy lifting until about May. Because they don't want you to tear open anything that they've done inside. So, kind of sucks. But I'm going to get it back in heaven. I just got to pushed off my triathlon until the summer, my mud runs in the summer. So I'll be back by the summer. I'll be good to go.
All right. John Ubaldi.
I just don't want to get fluffy.
Tell everybody where they find your work.
You can go to UbaldiReports.com. You can check me out on Facebook and Twitter at Ubaldi Reports.
There you have it. All right, bud. Have it. Take it easy. Good luck with your appendix.
All right. Thanks a lot, bud.
There you have it. John Ubaldi here on a Wednesday. We're going to continue our focus on nukes. Nuke Education 101, courtesy of the Secretary of Defense. We're going to take a break. That is coming up next.